To be honest, I quite like having a book anyway. So.
I do. I like to sit in the bog and read the book.
And whack off, yeah?
Whack off, yeah.
Anyway, I believe we were going to talk about voiceover IP.
Somewhere from the sprawling metropolis, it's Lug Radio!
Season 3, episode 3.
You dickhead.
Ah, I like that.
What the hell was that?
Oh, I like that. That was cool.
Yeah, that was brilliant. Yeah.
Blazing.
So, welcome to Lug Radio.
Welcome to Lug Radio, season three, episode three. Here with us we have...
I'm John O'Bacon.
You are...
Stuart Langridge.
You are...
I am the fabulously bald,
Abe Bradshaw.
Matt's not here. He's gone.
What?
He's not here. He's slacking once again.
Well, he's not slacking once again,
but he's not here. So we need.
But he's not here to defend himself.
We needed to get someone in to replace him, and you know we've had Adam in before, haven't we?
Yep.
So we're scared the country. What are we looking for? We're looking for someone with
Ronnie Corbett wasn't available.
We're looking for someone who's immensely tired.
Is suave.
immensely tired,
short bearded, and
we're looking for someone who was short, someone who was bearded, and someone who was a Lug Radio community hero.
Hey,
ladies and gentlemen, big it up for Mr. Ben.
Mr. Ben,
how you doing, Mr. Ben?
I'm doing all right, thank you.
I'm doing all right.
See, is it what you imagined?
Oh, and so much more.
So you spent the evening. I shouldn't have said that with the Lug Radio team.
It's an enormous bed, isn't it?
So now are you ready for this? Here comes the test. So, Mr. Ben, what do you think we should talk about this evening?
Yeah, what shall we talk about?
What should we talk about, Mr. Ben?
I think we should talk about what Linux is going to be like in 2050.
That's a great idea.
We should talk to Adam Leventhal from Open Solaris. That might be a prediction.
Oh, okay.
With an emphasis on the ditch. And I think we should talk about... I think we should do a hypershite and maybe talk about
hypershite.
1.0.
Yes, hypershite.
Open Solaris. Let's talk about that.
Yeah,
I just said that a minute ago.
I didn't hear you because you're Scottish.
Can you talk properly?
Sorry, we can't.
You missed that, you jock wanker. On the end of that, it seems a little unfair, but
it's a shame we can't put subtitles into fucking MP3s and Oxfam.
You can.
Anadex.
That's all we need.
We need Anadex.
So you can have you got a headache?
Jocks.
You got a headache.
Hey?
Not Adadin, you
Oh, right. So, jock wanker. So, how are you doing?
I'm not a jock.
Come here to get
Oh, yeah, you were trying to persuade us, so tell us in your...
Actually, there's an illustrative point. He called him a jock wanker, he goes, I'm not a jock.
Sorry, wanker. So, explain why you don't consider yourself a jock.
Because I'm not. Wasn't born there.
Hasn't lived there for most of his life.
But lives there now and has a Scottish accent.
I've got a Scottish wife, but...
And three do the Scottish think you've got a Scottish accent?
No, the Scottish think I've got an English accent.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
Yeah.
How many hubcaps have you got in your broom cupboard? Have you got your own bar at home?
Anyway, enough abusing the hero. Let's get on with the show.
Have we got anything else that we covered in today?
Well, let's see.
We're covering.
Okay, no, I think we mentioned it all. Let's go on with it.
I'll read the show summary, you bastards.
So earlier this year, we saw Sun release Open Solaris.
We did.
Were we responsible for that?
No. I think it was Sun. We did make them open source something, didn't we? Oh, no, that was Project Looking Glass.
That's what it was.
Not anywhere near as important as one of their key pieces of intellectual property. Project Looking Glass was a thing that two guys did at lunchtime one day.
I think we opened the floodgates. Java's next.
Definitely. That's what Lug Radio does. Yeah, definitely.
We try our best. So you were making a point.
Yeah, Open Solaris. Now, when I heard Open Solaris, I've got to admit, I thought servers. That's the first thing I thought of was servers. What do you guys think of when you think of Solaris?
Well, why? To be honest, to be brutally honest, why?
What do you mean, why?
Because, well, Solaris just seems to be an effort by Sun. I'm fairly cynical about this, as you can imagine. It seems to be an effort by Sun to woo the open source community.
To capitalize on open source.
It is, though, but from looking at their...
Because you can't complain that they don't open source things.
Oh, no,
and then
no,
when
no.
they do open source,
no,
they complain
again. Bitch and whine about it.
No, but from looking at their... record of experience with the open source community, they've always struck me as a company who's got a very sort of double-edged sword with the way they work with the open source community in different ways. They do some good things in some ways and some bad things in some other ways, But Solaris is a genuinely good thing, but it's just something I don't really care about. I'm quite happy with Linux. If it's another option,
well,
for free operating system.
Solaris was around before.
Eh?
In its defense, Solaris was around
it was,
before.
But in its,
but
in
it was an open source.
In its defense, potatoes
right.
around before, you know, and I don't really care about potatoes. So, but, you know, it's another free operating system.
You,
that's
ate,
good.
You ate chips this evening.
you make a good point.
Number of chips, actually.
The thing I always think about Sun rather than Solaris specifically
right, okay.
is their kind of lack of focus.
Yeah,
and
really?
I think, they're not sure whether they're an open source company or a closed source company. They're not sure whether
that's
they're a hardware
I mean,
or
yeah.
software company, whether they're focused on servers, focused on the desktop or whatever. And I think Open Solaris has brought that out to some extent because the way Open Solaris seems to be being pitched a lot is. That it's
or not pitched, to be honest.
Yeah, not pitched, but the impression I get, and this may be a fallacious impression because I'm just listening to it. But
Section 8.
Fallacious. But the
impression. Fallacio and impressionist.
The impression I get.
You can get the definition from dictionary.com, by the way.
Yes. I'll fucking link it in the show notes or something. the impression I get is that people are starting to pitch OpenSolaris and think of OpenSolaris as being a desktop operating system, a rival for desktop Linux. But I think if you actually press Sun people on this, they talk about how this is Solaris for the server market and the big iron enterprise market. It just happens to be open source now. So there seems to be a certain amount of disclarity at Sun about where Open Solaris is going, what areas of the market
I see
it's
what
pitched
you're
at. Possibly it's pitched at all of them.
I think we've got...
Yeah, I mean, Windows is pitched to all of them. Linux is starting to be pitched to all of them.
So there's some confusion, really, as to what they're aiming at with Open Solaris.
Yeah. Well, we should, you know, find out.
Why don't we show it to Adam Leventhal?
Yes.
This is Adam.
Hey,
Adam.
You're on Lug Radio. How are you doing?
Good, thanks. How are you?
Fantastic. I'm not so bad. You're here with Aid, Mr.
Hi.
Ben, and Ack. And first of all, just to get started, tell us a bit about Open Solaris.
So Open Solaris, June of this year... Sun released the Solaris source code into the open source community. It's about 5+ million lines of code. And rather than just, you know, tossing it over the wall, which is what some companies have done in the past, we really tried to breed a community around Open Solaris. And so far we're about 10,000 strong, and that's developers, users, system administrators. People who are interested in Open Solaris running Open Solaris.
Right. Yeah, cool. Okay, most of our listeners are going to be Linux people. So,
right.
Can you tell us a little bit about what makes Solaris or Open Solaris or both different from Linux?
Ooh, that's a tough one to sum up. Part of it is the development model, and sort of where the two have come from. So, Linux is a great operating system, and it has certainly grown from, you know, what was 10 years ago sort of a hobbyist operating system into something that which is really an enterprise-scale operating system. Solaris has sort of come from the other end of sort of extreme, where we've been focused on the enterprise, you know, from the early days, but haven't necessarily been so focused on the smaller systems, on usability, on those kinds of things. And what you've seen to an increasing extent in Solaris 10 and now in Open Solaris is a focus on, in addition to that focus on the enterprise, on scalability, reliability, stability, but also looking at things like how easy it is to use things, you know, how... You know, ditching CDE for something a little more contemporary like GNOME, that sort of thing. So I think that's sort of the difference in sort of maybe their history in you know, 10 seconds.
Cool. So you focused, originally it started with the enterprise, you say, and now you're looking towards the desktop. Could we just go very briefly touch on timelines? Because Solaris predates Linux.
It does.
Yeah.
What sort of
time period was Solaris first out? Because, I mean, I used Solaris in my last job, and when I was using it, I thought to myself quite a lot, this is a lot like Linux. But what I should really have been thinking is kind of the other way around.
Well, I think not. I mean, Linux is definitely... perhaps I misstated that a bit. I mean, Solaris has obviously been in development for, you know, 20-plus years. But I guess what I mean to say is that Linux started out focused on the desktop, you know, focused on individual users.
Yeah.
Whereas for a long time... you know, Solaris was just, or not exclusively focused, but the main emphasis was around, you know, larger systems. So this is why Solaris tends to scale better.
Yeah.
Until about Solaris 10, we had not necessarily forgotten about those smaller systems, but been more focused on the big systems, forgetting about small system performance, you know, individual micro benchmarks. But that sort of emphasis has changed quite a bit in the past, you know, 2 or 3 years from where we have been in say, the past 10 or so.
Sure, yeah. Could you just briefly touch on what Sun's motivation is to open source it? Is it that they believe it would improve the operating system, or...?
I don't think that I necessarily can speak for, you know, Sun Microsystems Inc. as the, you know, 30,000 plus employee behemoth. But certainly my perspective on this is that is for a couple of reasons. So first of all, we've been wanting to open source Solaris for a number of years. I think I've been working at Sun for about 5 years, and I've certainly been hearing about it since then.
Yeah. Okay.
So something we've wanted to do for a long time, and the motivation is that, you know, people are, I mean, I think in large part due to Linux and due to other successful open source projects, customers are interested in open source. They want to know that if, you know, Sun went out of business, if Red Hat went out of business, if whatever this software vendor went out of business, there's still that, you know, they're not locked into that particular vendor's source code, which would disappear with that vendor.
Yeah.
I think that's one element just for you know, sort of the bigger customers. The other reason we want to do it is to engage with more developers. You know, that's why we made Solaris 10 free and why we open-sourced Solaris.
Cool.
So that it's easier for people to get involved, to get their hands dirty into the source code and to fix the things they've wanted to do. You know, one of the successes of Linux has been its proliferation onto many different platforms, you know, supporting all kinds of crazy devices. And that's not because, you know, IBM or one of its corporate sponsors decided that they wanted digital cameras to be supported in Linux. That's because some guy with a digital camera decided to write some code.
Yeah,
we're hoping some of that happens for Solaris as well.
Do you kind of envisage that Solaris will move into that kind of consumer desktop market where you're going to get the device support and the hardware support for, you know, things like 3D cards and all the various bits and pieces that consumers use, but maybe the kind of corporate desktops don't use?
I do see Solaris moving that direction. And we've already seen that quite a bit in the past year and 2 and 3 years in terms of development and where it's going. Much more of a focus on the end user and on the on broader device support. You know, for example, getting it to work on all of our various laptops has been, you know, something that's just been a pragmatic need. You know, we have these laptops, we want to be able to develop on them, we want to use the wireless cards that are built into them. So, you know, that's definitely a direction that Open Solaris is letting us go in. That's not to say that Sun is going to, I mean, despite the fact that we're incongruously shipping laptops, that doesn't mean we're trying to, you know, stampede Apple's, you know, laptop market or anything like that. But you know, we do care more. I mean, so Open Solaris, as distinct from Sun, is caring more about the smaller systems. Yeah.
Just a quick question. I mean, in terms of Open Solaris, I mean, it's a free Unix operating system now. Has Sun missed the boat? You know, I mean, is it a bit too late? With a lot of people are using Linux nowadays. You know,
I think that's a really good question. I mean, so part of the reason why it took us so long to open source it is because this is something that has been growing for the past 20 years. That is, Solaris has been growing for the past 20 years. And a lot of the sort of the code is not clear who owns the copyright for it. So, you know, we'll do things like talk to a vendor and get some proprietary information so we can write a driver for it. Uh-huh. Well, then that driver is now in sort of a dubious or sort of a legal gray area. And then when that company goes out of business, it becomes very difficult to even know how we would you know, do the due diligence to understand if we can open source that code. So a lot of the work in initially creating Open Solaris, or rather making that code available, has been in the legal indemnification and understanding what the various copyrights and, you know, licenses are for this.
Right.
In terms of are we too late?
Yeah.
I don't think we are. And I think that the reason being is that I think there's a distinct – I think that as a lot of the customers I've talked to, larger customers, have gone to – you know, tried out Linux, in some cases it's fallen short in terms of not being necessarily ready to go in terms of enterprise space.
But surely, just to interrupt, I mean, at the moment – I mean, I use Solaris briefly. I've not used it extensively. But from what I can see, Solaris falls short of Linux at the moment.
Well, I think that depends on what kind of user you're looking at. I mean, if you're talking about, like, so I was just recently at OSCON in Amsterdam, And I got a bunch of comments like, oh, you're using, you know, the wrong version of GNOME. You know, your version of GNOME is 3 months old or whatever. So I think a lot of those sorts of criteria, Solaris is falling short of Linux. You know, it's not necessarily as friendly on the desktop space. When you're talking about in sort of the developer market or in the system administrator market, with Solaris 10, we had just amazing advances on the state of the art with things like dtrace and zones and things like the fault management architecture. Today we released a new file system called ZFS, or I guess I'll translate it as ZFS.
Yeah, thanks.
speaking to the most British crowd. These represent not just sort of nifty new gadgets on the side, but real advancements in the state of operating system.
Ah, cool.
So I can understand your perspective that perhaps Solaris is behind in some ways, but I think for a big swath of users, the reverse would be true.
I mean, at the moment, would you say that? I mean, I've got to point out, I'm playing devil's advocate here. I mean, you know, you guys have only just recently open sourced Solaris, and there's lots of work to do, obviously, with the direction of the roadmap. But it seems that people are already enjoying and using Linux in the server setting. Linux isn't particularly well established in the desktop setting, but it's about as established as a free version of Unix is going to get, other than Darwin without Mac OS X and all that kind of stuff. But, I mean, the thing I'm interested in finding out is, what is Solaris going to bring users, just everyday users, that Linux can't provide? I mean, maybe not at the moment, but what can you foresee in the next year?
So let me tell you, and I'll speak not at the moment, not the next year, but actually in the past, just a couple of anecdotes.
Okay.
So just a little disclaimer, I worked on this technology. I was one of the three engineers working on dtrace, so the dynamic tracing infrastructure in Solaris 10 and now in OpenSolaris. It's actually the first piece of OpenSolaris that was open sourced. It allows you to instrument at any level of the system to understand what's going on. And so if you're a developer or a system administrator, this is an incredibly appealing thing. So, you know, we've taken this to a lot of customers who have been on Linux, and sort of given them this challenge, which is to take their application, we help them move it over to Solaris, use dtrace on it, and find this big performance wins, you know, in the neighborhood of sort of a minimum of like 20%, 30%, 300% in, you know, not atypical cases. And then they bring that back to Linux and see the same performance gains. And then, you know, the gears start to turn a little bit, and they say, why are we moving it back and forth? Why are we going from Linux, putting in Solaris in development, and then back to Linux in production, when we can do that same analysis in production if we were deploying on Solaris?
Yeah.
So another example, a colleague of mine, Brian Cantrell, was at OSCON in Portland, and it's sort of just sitting around using his laptop, and some PHP guy walks up to him and says, you know, run some benchmark, is interested, whatever, but, Solaris, he's not necessarily so fascinated.
Okay.
Brian started showing him dtrace, showing him how he can use dtrace to trace not just PHP, but how his PHP code is interacting with the operating system, is interacting with libc or any of the other applications on the box.
Uh-huh.
Then the guy starts asking, so does Solaris run on VMware? So it was just that one technology demo, which was really turning around the perception for, you know, developers or systems or whomever.
Just to change tack a little bit, obviously we've seen a lot of community-based projects kind of spinning off from companies. So we've got Fedora kind of kicking off and some of the stuff that Novell have been doing with OpenSUSE. What is the kind of relationship between OpenSolaris and Sun now? Is that Sun essentially dropping Solaris, or is there kind of continued development work going into that? And what is the state with the Java desktop system now?
So the first point, so Sun is not at all dropping Solaris. Rather, we're taking that community of, you know, 500 or 1,000 developers inside of Sun and making those processes that we've been using for years and years just transparent and externalizing them a bit. So the way it's going to work is that OpenSolaris is, you know, the source code.
Right.
And then Solaris is our distribution of that source code.
So
like, you know, Fedora and Red Hat, I suppose. And we're already seeing a couple of other distributions, like the most interestingly, I think, is Nixenta, which is this sort of mashup of Solaris and Debian, which is
a very useful and
interesting system.
Cool. Quick question then.
Yeah, please.
Are we going to see a return of CDE?
Shut up!
No.
If you're really keen to see it, I suppose I could find you some binaries or something.
Yeah, but, yeah, yeah, you need to open source it.
All of our friends at SGI have been clamoring for that. I don't expect we'll see CD rear its extraordinarily ugly head again, but I guess you never know.
Yeah. The only reason I was asking is I recently installed OpenSolaris, and there was the choice of the two desktop systems, with CDE and the Java GNOME desktop.
I see. So, I mean, and I think this gets back a little bit to, what we were talking about earlier about the sort of the difference between Linux and Solaris a bit, is that one of the things that we're very conscious of is that we have customers who are using Solaris, and they want their things to keep working. We introduce Solaris 9 or Solaris 10 or OpenSolaris. They want their binaries to keep working. They want the things they expect to work a certain way to continue to work that way. So there are people who are mired in some, CDE quagmire, never want to dig themselves out of that particular rut, then, we allow them to stay in, the late 90s or whatever.
Early 90s.
Adam, I mean, you're obviously a technical guy, and you've done some fantastic work. I was reading a bit about some of the stuff you've been doing today. What is it about working on Solaris, and what is it about working at Sun that you enjoy? What keeps you excited about all this?
The thing that I enjoy most is, working on these incredibly relevant problems, knowing that my code is running at sort of the most important, some of the most important business applications, or when I go down to the FBI and they're running, the code that I sort of packed up in production, it's very exciting. But the other neat thing about working at Sun and working in the Solaris kernel group is just getting to work on the things I think are particularly interesting. Working on DTrace was just a fascinating experience and continues to be.
Yeah.
And then getting to choose the problems that I'm solving and solving hard problems is great. And the thing that is great about working at Sun is that Sun recognizes that operating systems are not a commodity. Right, that their investment in Solaris has been a very valuable one, and they're continuing to make it. And in fact, that Solaris is in some ways driving the company.
Right.
Cool. Yeah. Sun at the moment are doing an awful lot of stuff. They've got their fingers an awful lot of pies because they're Sun Microsystems and they're pretty big. From your perspective inside Sun, do you think that the company's trying to overcommit by doing everything at once, or do you think that you've got the capability to have a finger in every pie?
Well, I think in some ways we need to have a finger in every pie because, we're a systems company, right? So I was actually thinking this the other day about, would it make sense to spin off part of it or whatever, sort of bringing my very, 1997 mentality to the table. But,
yeah.
The real strength is as an integration company, as a full system company, being able to buy the hardware and the software at every layer from the same source. And not just, having cut one check, but knowing that all of that is going to be seamlessly integrated. So while I do think we're incredibly busy and sort of getting involved in a lot of different places, I think that is a pretty savvy approach given the scope of our company.
Yeah, cool. We've got one final question, really, and it's to do with the fact that Solaris has for quite some time been a 64-bit operating system. And I was just wondering, on the x86 platform, do you think that gives it any advantage?
Oh, absolutely. Thank you for such a softball question as the last one. But, I think that in terms of x64 support, AMD64 support, we definitely have a big advantage there. I actually was tuning into Lug Radio and listening to some of the commentary.
It's nice to know you're a fan.
64, some of the 64-bit Linux support. And from what I've heard there and from customers and from friends of mine, it's just the stability isn't there, the sort of
knowledge
of how to build a 64-bit system really isn't there.
Yeah. Yeah.
And as you say, we've been doing that for an awful long time. So
how many years is it that it's been 64-bit? I mean,
so it was since Solaris 7.
Sort of year are we talking for that then? I get confused with Solaris versions when you went to Sonos to Solaris.
Me too, especially because our internal names. I think it's around 96.
Right. Jeez.
You've been 64-bit since 96. That's impressive.
Credit where credit's due.
Right. So, 10 years of 64-bit experience. And now you look at every server we ship is a 64-bit server, that boots 64-bit by default.
So really, you could say if you're going to buy a 64-bit machine, then really you should be going with Solaris. Because nothing else seems stable at the moment.
I'll agree with you saying that. Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, I think Axe got one final question for you.
Yeah, just one very quick question. I'm an Ubuntu user at the moment. Would you say that I could and should switch to using GNOME on OpenSolaris right now?
So I think you could and should. I think you should definitely give it a try. I think you should pull down Nexenta and install it. It's very clean and easy and stuff. I'm not an Ubuntu user, so I can't really say how
shame
you know,
on you.
How transition's going
to
be.
But I have to say, I recently installed Solaris, and I have to say the installer was a lot better than I remember. I didn't manage to get it installed on a VM machine, but I managed to get it installed on a physical machine.
We should be working on a VM machine. So let us know if that's not working. I mean, from VMware, and I think what's the Kimu also. I mean,
yeah, sure.
Should
yeah.
just work. Awesome. And I think the Nexenta folks have a live CD, which is pretty good.
Cool. Okay.
Yeah, I mean, give it a try. I think it's great.
I'll try again. Definitely. Yeah. Well, thanks for talking to us. It's been great talking to you. I'm absolutely fascinated to watch where it's going to go now.
Yeah, definitely.
Thanks for your time, and we'll catch up with you soon.
Pleasure. Thanks for
it. Take care, Adam.
Bye. Bye.
Bye.
Well, we started last week with the first of three episodes.
Yes.
Of Hyper Shy.
Hyper Shy!
Hyper Shy 1.0. So, yeah, here it is again, second episode of Hyper Shy.
Yep.
This week, we are going to be discussing VoIP, or Voice Over IP.
Voice Over Internet
Voice
Protocol.
Over Internet Protocol, yes.
As I read in the asterisk book today.
The O'Reilly asterisk book.
Yes, it's very good. It's got a starfish on the front.
Yeah.
I like anything with a starfish on.
Presumably because it's a star, because asterisk.
Yeah.
Yeah, clever.
How very clever of them.
It is very, very clever.
Plus, you notice we're what? 45 seconds into the segment, Jono's already mentioned O'Reilly.
Shit your face.
You know, you can get that book free, by the way. You can get it as a PDF.
Ah. Yeah, it's great.
I didn't realise this until Ron told me after I bought the book. To be honest, I quite like having a book anyway. So.
I do. I like to sit in the bog and read the
and
book.
And whack off, yeah.
anyway, I believe we were going to talk about Voice Over IP.
We were.
So, is it hype or is it shite?
Well,
Aid, what do you think?
Well, have the case,
what's the word?
Case for the defence.
Well, you know me oh so well. It's really difficult because, as you pointed out last time, Mac, hype or shite is basically...
It's shite.
Yeah, exactly.
There's no good thing.
So I want to say that it's really good, but that's not hype and that's not shite. So I'm going to say it's neither hype nor shite because it's here, it's happening, so therefore it's not hype.
All right, let's rephrase this, okay?
It's good, therefore it's not shite.
Bed or chin.
Is it good or bad? I mean, do you think it's good or bad?
I think it's fantastic from a personal point of view. Definitely.
Why?
What do you mean, why?
Closing the question.
Say what you see.
Why?
Okay, well, first of all, it brings down the cost, so I can talk to people for nothing.
Yes.
Secondly, it's all open source software if you use Asterisk.
Yes.
Thirdly, it's just a cool thing to do with your Linux box.
It does have a lot of geek cred.
I'll be honest with you. We haven't gotten to my bit yet.
Yeah, well, I'm sure.
I think if you drew a little graph of them, then it reduces my cost to be this tiny, tiny little bar at the beginning. And then it's got loads of geek cred, would be a bar 40 miles high.
That's good. I thought that was going to be a negative thing there, but that's cool.
You can use open source software as a justification for why it's good.
Yeah, you can.
No, because that's not saying that, you know... Web browsers are good because you can get an open source implementation, or anything good if you can get an open source implementation.
The thing about Voice Over IP is it's like anything internet related, is it empowers a little person. So...
For years we've had to set us free from the tyranny of commodities, man.
The people's flag is deepest red.
Have you finished?
No.
So what I was saying is, for years we've paid ridiculous cost for like phoning abroad and things like that.
Yep.
Now we can take hold of that and we can actually.
We can call other geeks in other countries with asterisk boxes. Brilliant.
May I chip in? I'd like to jump to A's defence.
So neither hype nor shite. Carry on.
I think Voice Over IP is pretty cool. I mean, I think it's hype and shite. I think it's heap or whatever
the fuck it was. Height.
Yeah.
It's height.
It's height.
Shite.
Because it's great once it's set up and it's running. It's brilliant. What it does for you is fantastic.
Yes.
But it's a bitch to set up at the moment. I mean, I got a SIP phone for my birthday, and you guys knew about it because you colluded with Susan to make
it
happen.
Yes, we did.
and that wasn't too bad to set up. Asterisk is obviously more complex because it's a full-on PBX
thing. It doesn't
have
to be. I mean, you can use Asterisk at home, as you just tried
recently.
But
that's the thing. I mean, Asterisk at home is...
Hang on. You ought to illustrate that asterisk at home is a thing. This is not asterisk at your home.
Yes.
what kind of idiot would think that?
Yes.
Yeah, I can't imagine any bearded moron would think that.
Yeah, well, some people just need to be clearer when they're speaking.
So if you'd gone asterisk at home.
Yeah, I don't understand.
They just thought I was emphasising the fact that it was at my home. Exactly. No, we are talking about
asterisk
the product.
Home is, asterisk at home. Is it a live CD that can then be installed?
Yes.
Basically, yeah.
It's really clever, actually, because when it installs, it not only installs the software in your system, but when it reboots, it compiles asterisk for you. Mm-hmm. You know, because the whole idea
and it finally gives you a nice clean web front end.
And the web interface. You see, the thing is, asterisk at home is quite good. I played with it for a couple of hours today. Mm-hmm. The documentation's still not particularly great for it, but it's all right.
Are you slagging the O'Reilly book there?
Not the O'Reilly book,
which is of course fantastic, right?
Shut up, Thor.
O'Reilly.
So come on, hyper keep going.
But yeah, I mean, it's like a lot of things. It's a bitch to set up, but it's great once it's set up. And I agree with you. It gives people a lot more choice. It gives businesses a lot more choice because they can have like really flashy phone networks and stuff.
So you're talking about asterisk rather than necessarily VoIP.
Yeah, I mean
you got Skype as well. Of course, Skype's VoIP as well.
Yeah,
and that's not particularly easy to set. And
who invited
to
in
set up.
Fucking Skype? we love the closed source proprietary
Skype phone game, phone game, or that other one that's
yeah, Skype is easy to set up.
Skype is easy to set up.
So you can't. So VoIP isn't difficult to set up.
Yes, I mean, I suppose it's split into if you're going to be using a client or a server. A server's a bitch to set up. Using a client's fairly straightforward, but.
No, I think it's good. It's got
Lord
great potential.
Ack, give us your opinion.
Ging, I speak forth with the truth. Right,
you speak forth with your truth.
I think that the truth.
Oh yeah, the truth according to language.
All truth. So was that mistruth?
All truths are my truth.
Shut up.
He is the Iraqi minister of truth.
That's right.
The Iraqi minister of Ging.
The ministry of truth. I think it's hype. It's not shite.
How can it be hype? It's already here.
No, but it's not already here. It's here for bald network technicians. It's not here for ordinary
okay, that,
people.
That's a potentially fair comment.
No, thank you very much. The reason I think it's hype is people are talking about voice over IP. Like, in 5 years now, there's going to be no British Telecom. There's going to be no Vodafone. None of that stuff. All that crap is going to go away. For Yankless, there's going to be no Sprint or MCI or Marbell or whatever. You know, we're all just going to...
Marble.
AT&T.
Marbles.
AT&T went away years ago. But they seem to be... All the bits that AT&T broke up into are now coming back together again.
Anyway.
But yeah, the way people are talking about VoIP and talking it up is though, you know, it's the same thing as the idea of... individual bands making music and then giving it away on their websites.
Yeah.
So, you know, we can cut out the middleman. We can cut out the corporate bastards who are screwing us all for money.
Yeah, exactly.
And it's hype bullshit.
No, it's like, an empowering technology.
It's not an empowering technology because it won't work like that.
It does work like that.
It won't do because if you do that, if you insist that if everyone moves over to VoIP,
yeah.
Then all the people who actually provide all the backbone that all the internet runs on won't have any fucking money anymore.
Right.
Right? The point is that the only reason free stuff like this can exist
the people who run
is
the backbone,
because...
You're saying the people who run the backbone make their money from telephony charges.
I think they make as much...
Enormous chin.
You bid... Infested dickhead.
What are you talking about?
The point is that they make a reasonable amount of money by the fact that there is a large corporate network and they can afford to let some free stuff go through.
If you make
everything free, there's suddenly no money in
the
system.
The money is just changing from analog analog telephony to data lines.
But the way you're expecting it's going to work is that you've got your internet connection, which you're currently paying for, but then you can stop paying for phones.
I've already done it. Start using
your internet connection instead and not pay any more money. Yeah, right? Which means a great massive pile of money disappears out of the system.
Disappears out of BT, but still stays
Where does it go? It stays with you, bald man. It stays with the individual user.
Absolutely, yeah.
Yeah, but the point is, I love the idea in theory, but in practice, if you take all that money out of the system, BT won't have as much money.
So if BT collapses, do you think the internet will collapse?
If BT and Verizon and MCI and Sprint all collapse, then yes, I do think the internet will collapse.
Because that's going to happen on the same day,
isn't it?
But
telephony and...
It will do if everyone suddenly stops paying.
The thing is, you're making the assumption that what's going to happen is that they're going to... this VoIP hammer is going to smash on them, and they're basically not going to know where to go. They're not going to be able to change their businesses so they can maximize the data.
We've already seen that.
They're already prioritized. They're already basically translating VoIP into the language that people can understand and making a lot of money from it.
This is the point. But as soon as you start saying, okay, instead of letting VoIP just go through on the internet, which you've already got, they need to start monetizing VoIP in order to keep going, suddenly, Baldman's point number one, which is that I get to do it for nothing, goes away.
That's never going to happen.
What's never going to happen?
They're never going to monetize VoIP.
But that's the point. You're assuming you'll get all this stuff for free, so you can take all this money away from the people who are providing it, and then they'll just go, oh, well, we never really meant to make that much profit anyway. That just comes off our profit margins, and we'll still be fine.
You're still going to be paying for line rental.
Yeah.
Unless you're with a cable provider.
Yeah, I am with a cable provider.
Okay, if you're with a cable provider, then you can get away with not paying line rental.
Oh, so you're talking about... Oh, I see your point of view now. So you're talking about ADSL access, therefore you still have to have a telephone line.
Which is a large chunk of the UK.
Not necessarily ADSL, even. I mean, the whole point is that you're assuming that...
Get a proper internet.
That you can take loads and loads of money out of the system. And keep it with ordinary people, and assume that the people who that money went to will still be able to keep running and keep providing.
Well, I don't
the
care whether they keep
doing.
Running as long as my ISP keep going.
Where does your ISP get their feed from? They get it from MCI or Sprint, or they get it from BT. And you're going to suddenly say to BT, your business model's fucked off. At what point are they going to stop providing the backbone when you stop paying them money?
BT don't provide my backbone.
They provide a reasonable portion of the backbone across the UK.
Nah, only voice.
No, they've got a lot of data stuff.
Really?
Yeah.
The thing is, though, is what you're saying is you're basically saying that the system's basically going to collapse on itself when you take the phone lines away. When people don't need phone services as much, these companies can't invest in the network that drives voice over IP, and the whole thing's going to collapse on itself.
Yeah.
But the thing is, I see exactly where you're coming from, but I think it's another one of those, it could happen, but it's fucking unlikely to happen.
Okay. I have
one more very quick point. This point is going to go away. The other reason I think it's hype at the moment is because it's for bald network gigs. Ordinary people can't.
Doesn't have
VoIP,
to be fair.
But
anybody can get a phone and just go with a provider. If you want to build your own asterisk server, then
no,
network.
You see, but that's still not easy, but it will
quickly
be
then,
easy.
Come on.
I'm aware that that will quickly. Be fixed over time.
Yeah. It's the difference between Slackware 96 and Ubuntu.
Yes, I know. It'll be. That's what I said. It'll be fixed.
It's
it'll be fixed
cool.
in
right.
time.
Mr. Ben.
But it's not ready yet.
Voice over IP.
Mr. Ben.
Voice over IP. Is it hype? Or is it shite? Or is it neither? Or is it both?
I think it's good. In general, and I think that everyone's going to be using
it. Hype, shite?
I think both? It's hyped. But I think it's
getting in on the theme.
I think that a lot of people are talking about it and making it out like you're saying that suddenly everything's going to be free and wonderful. I don't think in reality that's going to happen for the majority of consumers. And that's because you're
not. Well, the thing is, I don't care about the majority of consumers, to be honest.
Yeah, but
if the truth was
sorry,
known,
you don't care about what?
The majority of consumers, blah, 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 blah,
it's
blah,
because you're
blah, blah,
a tech elitist.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Let me finish my point.
Yeah,
let the man finish.
I think...
You interrupted him. Shut up. Sorry. Carry on, mate.
You said that before.
Ooh. Controversial. So it's hype.
I don't think it's shite. I think that voice over IP as a technology is good, and I think that a lot of people will be using it. Mm-hmm. But I think at the moment it's something that is being hyped a lot beyond its goodness. And I think at the moment, I see Axe's point that not everyone can get to use it. It's a lot harder. And for instance, if you don't have a PC, you're screwed.
Yeah. Wouldn't have a PC?
That's quite a lot of weirdos.
They deserve everything they get.
See, that comes back to the point you made earlier, which is that you say, well, I don't care about most consumers. But if you think, fuck it, I don't care.
A slightly flippant point, I have to add.
Well, yeah, but, you know.
But someone who works for an ISP, I think that's pretty bold. I mean, it's not as if all your customers aren't using ADSL.
Bold. And bold.
Are they all cable?
He's bold and he's bold.
Yeah, they're on private lease lines.
Private lease lines, though. Because we can all afford those.
I think a certain amount of truth was revealed in jest there, to be honest with you. You genuinely don't care.
No, I don't.
But the point is that but you want the phone network to go away, but how are you going to ring up all
my
these people
network,
when they haven't got a phone
my
anymore?
My phone network has gone away.
Yeah, but you still have to go over the phone network for a reasonable
only
distance.
Only to non-geekies.
Oh, so if you're prepared to only talk to spots, then that's fine. Which is like saying, I'm only going to speak Esperanto from now on because I'm not interested in people
that's
who don't speak Esperanto. Which is fine.
When
and
my
you
was
communicate
in
with your Esperanto friends, but you can't buy fucking bananas.
When my friend went to Austria this summer, I spoke to him through VoIP. Now, the telephone conversation went entirely across the internet to Austria and only popped out onto the phone network in Austria. Yeah. So I only play, like, 1.2
But you still require a phone network in Austria for that to work for him.
Yeah, but you want the phone network to go away?
Not necessarily.
Yes, yes, you do. You want it to go away and be replaced with loads of people with sit phones plugged into the internet.
I want people to be free, man.
The thing is, it's not going to happen until some guy can go down to Dixon's, pick up a voice over IP phone and plug it into the socket in his wall.
Analog telephone adapters, right?
But
you just plug your ordinary phone into an analog telephone adapter, stick that into the back of your internet connection.
In that case, done. Why aren't people selling phones with them built in? So you just take a phone, plug it into your router, and that's it. And the answer is...
But you missed that.
That's not it.
That's got a VoIP phone.
You missed my point.
What's that plugged into?
And it's £100. Who's going to spend £100 on a phone?
They're coming down all the time.
But you missed the point. I'm not talking about plugging it into the router. I'm talking about the socket in the wall in their house. When they move in, they plug in their thing, and it works.
They shouldn't have to be expected to buy a hub first.
That will happen, but it will only happen when the companies that do that, like BT, put the sockets in your house, actually are doing that, and therefore they're going to be making money from it.
You mean they're not going to have Cat 5? What kind of conditions are these people living
in?
Let me rewind a little bit. I don't care about consumers. No, you don't.
The thing that I think is interesting is that I was expecting the discussion when we said we were going to talk about VoIP in this segment. I was expecting it to predominantly focus on it's hard to use, therefore it's shit. Whereas it seems like a lot of the discussion is focused on, well, the phone companies might actually die.
But I think the usability of VoIP
is going to get easier in the same way that it was a bitch to set up Linux years ago.
Well, as you say, Skype proves that it doesn't have to be difficult.
Yeah, but the thing is, I mean, personally, I think the threat's there.
How simple was it to set your phone up to directly to Sipgate?
It was pretty simple.
Pretty simple, yeah.
That's only going to improve. Sue could have done it.
I think so, yeah.
Where did you get the instructions?
On the website, on Sipgate. Yeah.
So how did you know to go and look at Sipgate?
Because he signed up with Sipgate.
If you'd just gone to the thing and you go, oh, I heard about this VoIP thing, you want to be able to just bring a phone home and plug it into the wall.
So in the same way that you just want to bring a computer home and just run Windows.
You want an AOL phone, don't you?
Basically, because that's what you need for VoIP to be popular.
And you need the AOL phone.
You'll have the market leaders who are going to make it easy for people who don't know a lot about it to use it. But you're going to have choice, and it's going to take time for this.
So just a quick recap then. Hypershite, John?
Pretty good.
Ack.
Hype.
Good but hyped.
Okay.
Years ago, when I first got involved in Linux, and I started getting interested in it,
when I was a lad,
there was various arguments that people had as to why you should use this kind of fairly young operating system. And at the time, it was fairly incomplete. It required a shitload of work to get it working.
I feel like climbing onto your knee while you tell this story.
Grandad, tell us about our Linux wars back then in 1999.
I'll give you a word as original if you want.
Anyway, spanking.
And thanks very much, Mr. Ben. Back then, one of the core arguments that people said why you should move to Linux was performance.
Absolutely.
They said if you run this on your system, it's so much quicker than using Windows or from using DOS or whatever at the time. And
that was my experience, to be fair, when I first got into it.
At the end of the last century, absolutely. Now, recently, everything seems to have slowed down a lot.
I accept that
a lot's going on now. We've got a lot more software out there, a lot more frameworks.
Fucking frameworks.
But it seems like we've lost the focus on performance now. And when you used some...
Shall I tell you why everything's running slower?
Tell us. A story, Python. Old bear.
Python.
Shut up.
It's not Python. Nobody writes in a proper language anymore. Everyone writes in fucking high-level languages.
A proper language.
So Red Hat's always been shite because it runs on Python.
Red Hat runs on Python, does it?
Oh, right, yeah. And perhaps you'd explain how many Windows applications, which are slow, are written in Python or high-level languages.
But they're slow because they're Windows, and we were always quite quick.
Oh, I see.
And Linux is always...
Can I just say one word to you?
Would it begin with C?
It would, yes.
Would it end with N?
Chin.
Chino-matic. Okay, tell us your theory then. Why is everything
so
bad?
I don't really have a theory. It's a question,
I got
really.
So, I mean, in the 90s, I had a Windows 98 laptop, and I put Red Hat 6. Something on it, and it was significantly faster than Windows 98.
Significantly faster than Yow.
These days, I would say XP runs quicker.
So would I.
I have a theory, actually. I've just thought of a theory.
Quicker than the current...
Well-fed theory.
Yeah, I thought about it a while back, but I'd forgotten it because it became uninteresting.
Weird.
But yes, I have a theory. I mean, the thing is, there's a lot more software development going on now. So we've got, for example, we've got GNOME, and that's got all the various bits and pieces that needs, such as HAL and Dbus and all the bits on top.
And the clipboard.
And the clipboard. And there's all these daemons going on, and then you've got X, and then you've got that on the kernel. There's all of these different layers. So there's a lot more layers now than there was years ago, but computers have got faster.
So there's more abstraction.
There's a lot more abstraction, and there seems to be a lot more developers who are writing code to fit to implement the features, but not necessarily with performance in mind.
Python developers?
No, all developers.
Sorry.
So for example,
what's OpenOffice written in? Oh, C.
It's written in lots of things,
and
to
it's
be
fucking
fair.
Dogs.
There's bits of it in Java, and there's bits
None of the bits in Debian derived distributions are in Java because it's non-free.
The core bits and pieces are written in C++. It's slow
to load. It's not slow to run. It's not. There isn't a performance
fucking
issue.
Well, is
there isn't a performance issue?
Slow. No.
It's slow to load.
It's got a cold. Its cold startup time is slow, but when it's actually running,
there's nothing wrong with it.
It's fair. It's
no. You see, I think it's fine because you're used to stuff running slow. You know, if I say...
Do you find yourself typing it and OpenOffice not keeping up with you or something?
Occasionally, yeah.
My enormous, massive, enormous
And a lot of that is because... It's watching the words that I type in and it's popping up a little help thing.
But that's because it's
like
trying to do that thing where it completes the words for you, which, or like Microsoft Office, doesn't do that. So obviously that's going to have a performance
issue. The thing is, though, when you load up Word, it pops up... Pretty much instantly.
That's what's hard. It's already loaded by the operating system.
No, it's not.
It's not.
In Microsoft's defense, that's not the case. It is for Internet Explorer, but it's not for Word.
The thing is...
No, they do. The Microsoft Office has a component that loads at startup.
It can do, yeah. In the little system tray thing, yeah.
No, it does. I mean,
but 90% of the application... 90% of the application...
Anyway, let's get back to the point.
Yeah, the point I'm making is that... The thing that... It's got triggered this discussion was I've been reading a lot of blog entries recently with people who are doing. There seems to be a lot of people.
During your own free time.
Of course. Yeah. There seems to be a lot of people recently.
And allocated breaks.
Allocated breaks. A lot of people are really focusing on performance at the moment.
Yeah,
good.
I mean, they're being paid to work hard on it during the day, whereas you're being paid to read about them working hard on it during the day.
You're saying people are starting to focus on performance. That's great.
I think.
About time.
Like, I don't know if you guys have noticed it, but in the last sort of 6 or 9 months, people have really... There's been a lot more focus on performance. A lot of people seem to be looking in great depth. I mean, the canonical example of this is Federico Mena Quintero. Guy with a cool name. What a cool name. And he's written, like, 9 or 12 blog entries about profiling the file picker, right?
Okay.
Yeah. And his ambition is to get it down... is to get it up on your screen within 0.1 second.
Yeah.
And... The thing that's interesting
Nautilus.
Me is the file chooser.
The file chooser in application.
You know, the open file dialogue.
Yeah.
And the thing is that the thing that I think is good is that he's spending so much effort and going to massive amounts of detail to optimize this really small part of GNOME.
Mm-hmm.
So if that happened in every part of GNOME, because the plan for the next version of GNOME is for it to start without the splash screen. Because that splash screen that
really
fires up...
don't see the point of that, by the way, but...
What?
Why are they doing away with that?
Because you never restart your computer is why you don't see the point of that. If you booted it up every morning...
Who does that?
Why is the splash screen there?
Everyone at work!
The splash computers at work are always left on.
Are computers at your work always left on?
No.
Are computers at your work always left on?
No.
Right.
Really?
I take a laptop to work. They use a shitload of electricity. Imagine if IBM decided to do that, and then someone went, I've got an idea. We should just turn off all the computers at night,
and we save ourselves
£750 million.
That's not true, because they're going to power saving. But how are they going to get their updates? How are they going to get their AV definitions?
But irrespective of where it's... The point I'm making is that
that's
splash screen...
For.
That splash screen when GNOME boots is there to cover up for the fact that
it takes ages.
It takes ages to load.
Yes.
So the splash screen isn't the thing that makes it take ages to load.
No.
The splash screen takes no time to load.
Exactly. Why do away with that then? Because doesn't that just tell you what part's loading?
Yeah, but what they're doing is they're saying they want to cut the performance. They want to make it so much more performant that
you don't need the splash screen anymore.
It just fires up straight away.
They said, okay, when you start up GNOME, it takes 15 seconds to start up. People don't want to look at a blank screen, so we'll do a splash screen instead.
Yeah.
But it would be much better if, instead of having a 15-second wait and a splash screen, we had neither. So when GNOME started, it just started and it was done.
Well, why not just have a very quick splash screen or something?
Why have a splash screen? Just make the software load.
If you're going to have a splash screen, which appears on the thing for 0.1 seconds, you're not even going to see it. But the point...
let's get there first and then get rid of the splash screen.
That's
what they're aiming to do. Okay.
When they say, let's get rid of the splash screen, they're not saying, the most important thing we can do is, this window doesn't show anymore. The point is to speed up GNOME startup so you don't need it anymore.
I don't know if you got... You're running Breezy, aren't you?
Yes.
And are you running Breezy?
On my laptop.
And Ben, are you running Breezy?
Yeah, on my laptop.
I've noticed, even just in Breezy, because I think some of the initial work went into Breezy, that the file picker flies into the screen much quicker than it used to. And a lot of the work that's going into GNOME is aimed at improving the performance. And there was another amazing blog posting by Michael Meeks, who just managed to cut the startup time of OpenOffice virtually in half.
Cool. Yeah, I get the impression here, before we go too far into saying, wow, look at the performance gains you can get. The reason you can get performance gains like that is because no one's done anything
before. Because they're so massively slow at the moment.
Basically, they're picking up, what do the Yanks call it? Low-hanging fruit. It's the stuff that's dead easy to do, where they're saying, Federico Meniquintero, maximum play to him. He's done great work and everything, but what he did was, I get the impression at least partially went through the code and went, oh, look at that, it takes the directory that's looking at it, and it enumerates it 15 times. Let's make it enumerate it one time, and that'll make it faster.
I think what he does,
it's when you've chopped out all the easy shit to do, and it's still not fast.
What he's doing is he's going through the code and says, oh, look, that was written in Python. Well, fuck that off. I'm going to write it in C.
The thing is, as well, is when I wrote the thing about it, he sent me an email.
You wrote a blog entry about it?
I did.
Where did you get it?
The O'Reilly Network. He sent me an email saying, it's not just me. There's loads of people working on this.
People working on performance, I always think gamers, because gamers are always like anal about performance.
Well, you see, the thing is him and another guy called, I think it's pronounced Bedad. Is the other developer.
Your dad? He's Iranian.
He's Iranian. Iraq, I think
Your dad's Iranian?
Not my dad, no.
He's my dad.
My dad's been working on
that. Oh, nice.
Yeah, my dad's not been working on that, I can assure you. But he said, check out the performance channel on IRC channel on the GNOME IRC servers.
That'd be a great TV channel, wouldn't it?
The performance channel.
Look how quick the file chooser
fucking
opens.
Look at my sysprof
and
output.
And now here's optimized.
And there's shitloads of people really, really nailing so many parts of GNOME.
Thank God.
And it's what it needs.
We need to be out in front again.
People have been hammering on at KDE for years about this. And when people have hammered on at GNOME, it surprised me because GNOME is a lot faster than KDE. It is a lot faster than KDE. Okay.
One of us should really run KDE.
I do believe I would dispute a lot. It used to be a lot faster, and now it isn't. It's now faster.
Yeah, you maybe got a point there. I mean,
that's faster, by the way. No.
I mean,
KDE suffered from, as I'm sure many of you will be aware, KDE suffered from framework allergy.
It did a bit.
Well, not allergy, just...
Affinity is the word you're looking for. There's a couple of points. The first one is, absolutely, I agree with you, Federico and whatnot are doing great work. It does concern me a little bit that we need lots and lots of Federicos. By the sound of it, we've got lots of Federicos.
Yep, good.
And the other thing is, when you said, you have Windows 98 and you're comparing it with a Linux laptop, it was running some kind of noddy window manager and didn't do very much. So it gets to be fast.
GNOME.
GNOME 1 didn't do much.
Right, okay.
It was a noddy window manager that didn't do a lot. As we keep adding features, the final...
So is the answer to run XFCE then?
It would help, but then you miss out on some of the features.
Such as
integration between applications. Such as you have to configure your application separately to know where your printer is, where the browser is.
Integration's the main thing.
I'm exaggerating slightly, GNOME gives you a better degree of integration.
And GNOME's a good developer platform.
Okay, we've got a suggestion here from the forums.
Yeah.
J Meadows 111.
Sorry, from the what?
From the forums.
What's
you know,
that?
something you're never on.
Yeah.
Why aren't you on A?
Do you think?
Moving
you're,
on.
You're a lazy bastard.
Do you think his mum calls him J Meadows 111, or do you think he's J Meadows 111 to his friends?
I think he was 111, but he changed his name by Deadpool to 111.
Oh, no, he was just really excited, and he was like, J-Mode is !!
Mr. Shifty.
So anyway, Master Ben of greatness.
Monsieur Ben.
Hey, okay.
Monsieur Ben.
So he says, here's an idea. It is the year 2050, and no, he hasn't got the numbers wrong. It is the year 2050, and the latest Linux kernel supports ITTP. That's the Internet Time Travel Protocol to you and me.
Obviously. Yeah.
Obviously, of course. So the host of the Lug Radio, who are now
time travel
old
over,
and even more bold, decide to go back in time to 2005 and visit their younger selves.
That'd be weird.
What do you think they might have to say about how Linux / open source will have fared over four decades? Maybe they will just share war stories about year 2038.
I was going to say, if I travel back from time from 2050 to now,
you'd warn yourself to not walk in front of that ice cream truck.
I would have hair anyway.
You say to yourself, hey, don't step in front of that ice cream truck on the way home.
What was the war that happened in 2038? Do you think that was the Linux Link Tech Show versus
the rise of the machine, wasn't it?
That's a 2038 bug.
That was
when all the computers died.
Of course, the post-millennium.
Fucking lose
bug.
All geek credibility points, John.
Sorry,
I thought it was Skynet.
Anyway.
Skynet
yeah, takes so, 2050. What do we think? What's going to happen in 2050? The guy wants to know.
So is he talking about what Linux operating system will look like in 2050?
I think, Linux/open source.
What he said is, what has Linux/open source, how has it fared over four decades?
He wants us to talk about how we think it would have fared over four decades.
Yeah.
It or all the world.
You think that?
End of segment.
Thank you very much, and goodbye.
Good night, everyone.
A tiny, tiny piece of justification wouldn't go amiss.
Why do you think it's going to rule the world, apart from the fact that you're full of shit?
You've listened to too many code words.
It's the right thing. And we should do the right thing, right?
Historically has made a difference.
Do you think that...
Absolutely. Good always wins over evil. That's why.
I do recall there being a guy who was nailed up to a piece of wood who might disagree with you. Is that Brian?
Do you think that Linux is going to rule the world or open source is going to rule the world?
Do I even think Linux will be around in its present form? Well, I think operating systems in their present form won't be around. I think we'll go into our houses at night.
Linux will be in a different sort of
flavour and shape. We won't be using keyboards and mice. We'll just be talking. We'll say, like, fetch email. Read me my email.
A faintly interesting...
it's going to be like minority
slightly
report.
Related thing is 40 years ago, it was 1965.
Yes.
Do you think change is speeding up?
No.
So do you think the difference in between now and 1965 is roughly equivalent to the difference in between now and...
No, not at all.
2050?
Totally not. Well,
you're about 5 years out for a start.
Change has got to slow down.
I'm being approximate. You think change is going to slow down?
Most definitely. I mean, there was a lot of advances to be made at first when we just started getting to grips with this technology, but now we're kind of squeezing every last little bit out of it.
Until someone comes up with a brand new idea, you know? I mean, someone comes up with quantum computers in 2011.
I don't know, I disagree, because back then...
I think desktops will change.
Back then it was more difficult in many ways to innovate in these different kinds of ways, whereas anyone now... I mean, look what open source has done. Anybody can be a hacker and create some really cool technology.
Anyone can innovate. You don't need
a
computer in the size of a building to do it.
Do you remember back in 1997, I think it was, something like that, when Intel announced that the 486 DX2 was basically the last processor they could ever create?
I don't think hardware is going to change... as quickly as it's changed over the last 40 years.
You don't think?
But I think operating systems will change massively.
But we're not going to be using mice and keyboards, but the hardware's not going to change.
I don't think it'll change much, as in the actual underlying chips, silicon.
Are we all going to be walking around with a great big G5 strapped on our backs then or something?
So you think we'll still be using silicon and still be using motherboards and that sort of thing? The typical kind of staple.
I'd like to think that we're not. I'd like to think that we push the boundaries past that. But
I think there's obviously going to be a lot of... There's lots of discussion about quantum computing and there's discussion about...
His question was not really about operating systems. It was about how open source would fare.
So do we think that open source is going to be around in 40 years? Right.
Judging by how it's grown,
See, open source, open source is a methodology. It's not a technology, and that's where it will be around.
This, to me, this is going to sound like a ridiculous, you know, true.
So how from your mouth,
bear with me. Either it's going to have completely won, or it's going to have completely disappeared.
Ah, oh, thanks for that blinding insight there.
Well, but
complete and utter
bullshit. I don't think it's going to sort of bobble on the way it is at the moment. Either the world is going to recognise that the open source methodology is the best way to go.
That's the one.
The world will basically turn away from it. They'll say there's no point doing this open source thing. It's never going to be successful, whatever, and turn away.
You've suddenly turned around and started talking out the other end. There's no way that open source will either completely win or completely lose.
Yes.
It's a methodology, but it's never going to be the only methodology that people use. It's never going to be.
Because it won't.
Because there's a million and one. There's a million.
I think I said this in the last episode. There's this really ridiculous view inside the open source community that we've got to win everything. If you look
it will have won in the same way that the scientific method.
What I'm saying is that the vast majority.
So says intelligent design.
If you look at
it's obviously won completely because everyone follows that science methodology.
Semi reasonable.
Programmers and developers are intelligent people, right?
Yeah. No.
Okay. Okay.
Only Python programmers.
All right. Fair enough. Whatever. So, given that fact, right, they're intelligent people. They are going to come to realize that the open source development model is the only way to develop good software. They will come to realize that because they're intelligent people, and that's why I think open source.
And who are programmers and developers employed by? Businessmen.
Yeah, but
and businesswomen.
Yeah, but they
businessmen and businesswomen want to make money.
They can pitch to the businessmen and say,
if that's the case. If businesses can't work on open source, then I think people will have realised that in the next four decades, and they'll go, there's no point doing the open source thing because it only works inside a capitalist money-making framework.
Business people will realise they can't afford to not.
IBM's and everyone like that will step away again.
The thing I was going to say is that if you look at the vast majority of networks, big networks and small networks, most of them are running many different flavours of operating system, many different types of technology.
Chin.
BR.
It's true.
Chin. Beard record.
Most
I think most of them are running many different flavours of Windows.
Yeah, different versions of Windows. People are running Unix boxes dotted around. People are running Windows desktops and Samba servers.
No, it's true.
There's this ridiculous.
Maybe in the small businesses.
There's this ridiculous.
No.
It's particularly prevalent in larger businesses. If you look at the vast majority of businesses,
businesses standardise.
So when you were at Certegy, everything was Windows.
99 or desktops, all of them are Windows.
Right.
Servers, probably 90%.
But you were still running other operating systems.
Not many.
But most
you can't afford to have people who support lots of different operating systems.
But the fact is, you're going to have certain organisations are going to run an entirely Linux shop, an entirely Windows shop,
It's going to be that
future OS shop or whatever it's going to be.
Finding multi-skilled people is difficult.
But the fact of the matter
expensive.
Is, there's always going to be competition in the industry. And although I agree that open source is going to be pretty dominant, I think it's going to be a really dominant force in IT, it'll never ever totally win out in the same way that no technology will ever totally win out. I think
business people will come to realise that using the open source methodology, they're going to get better software and they're going to get it cheaper.
But do you think that matters to them?
Yeah, because they're business people.
Bear in mind...
But if they can make more money more quickly and people aren't going to notice... But
bear in mind that
the development model is cheaper.
If you're assuming that business people are rational and they're there to maximise profit, and what you were saying was the case, they'd all be using open source now and they're not.
That's just because they don't realise.
No, it's not.
What makes you think they're going to realise in the next 40 years?
That they'll...
Fucking well have to, won't they?
They'll be beaten into a pulp by all the developers that say, look, they should really pay attention to this open source thing.
Historically, developers pissing and moaning about stuff makes managers do things.
I think they care about developers about as much as you care about consumers.
Yeah. That's a really valid point.
Straight to the heart.
I'm going to just twist that a bit as well.
Hang on,
Microsoft, of course, Microsoft...
So who are that? Who's that?
This massively Microsoft are this massively
dominant. I remember them from 40 years ago.
You know, Microsoft is massively dominant company, right?
Bill Bailey.
Microsoft is massively dominant company and...
At the moment.
They're going to... And then they are losing a degree of hold on the industry... to people like Red Hat, and IBM and Sun are back in open source in different ways. But
I'm not sure if they're losing it to companies, but they're losing it in areas. So I think they're losing a bit of grip,
but they're still by far the most dominant industry. And the question you've got to ask is, do you think that Microsoft can be beaten in 40 years?
Yes.
Because Microsoft has basically got
a, yes.
I agree that their, I think that their dominance in the market is going to be, it's, everything's going to level out. And it's going to level out between organizations who are selling software and selling services, right? Mm-hmm. But if you look at a lot of dominant organizations now, they're still trying to sell you per-seat licensing.
How many end users do you know that have paid for their Windows operating system?
It depends.
End users, generally.
Are we talking about regular people who go to computer fairs, or are we talking about businesses?
No, I'm talking about end users. I'm not talking about business. I'm talking about private users now.
Private users, yeah. I think most people rip it off.
Absolutely. So if you could tell Windows? Those people...
I don't. No, that's bollocks.
No, they do.
Unless they buy it on the computer.
Yeah.
I don't think anybody ever upgrades. If they do upgrade, they pretty much rip it off, but nobody upgrades.
Exactly that. Yeah, completely, yeah.
No, they do. They do upgrade.
If you can install an operating system and you don't have a disk
on it, you upgrade it to XP. That always happens.
No. Possibly your mate upgrades it to XP, but that depends on you having a mate. Like, who can do that? Not just having mate. Can we, I don't talk just about the philosophy thing too much. Should we talk a little bit about maybe what's going
to
be different?
That's about, what I was about to say. Yeah. Let's
move on a little bit from how will
what
the
will
open source
like?
Methodology deal with the challenges. And more, what do you think it's going to look like? What do you think the operating system is going to look like? And what do you think the community is going to look like?
The operating system, as I say, I think is just, we're going to just, keyboards and mice are going to disappear. Everything's going to be voice controlled. Screens are going to be enormous.
Why voice?
Bullshit.
Because it's just the easiest thing to do.
It isn't. Thinking's a lot easier.
How the fuck do you play Doom with your voice as well?
Left a bit, right a bit, up, kneel, shoot.
A lot of things are
gameplay. I don't put the two together.
A lot of things are going to be replaced by voice. Yeah,
yeah.
But
thinking about
as to what the community is going to be like,
VR.
I don't know.
Thinking about VR.
It, yeah, yeah. I mean, if there's, I'm sure within 40 years we're going to be able to control things with our brains somehow.
I would hope the games market would have moved into total immersion software.
Absolutely. I mean, there is a kind of a thing. You know, any time you look back 30 or 40 years and find people who were saying then, this is what the world's going to be like in 40 years. But you look at some people in 1920, they're all going, yeah, everyone would be flying all over the place and everywhere. But all the planes were biplanes.
Yeah.
It's really difficult games to imagine.
Like, have you seen Existence, the film?
Oh, God, what shit.
Oh, pile of
fucking ace film.
It's the shittiest
No, but games will be like that. They'll be total immersion
about,
games.
That film's about as good as You Are Hairy. Right.
Okay.
Shite.
The film may or may not be shit, but that's what gamers will be like in 40 years' time.
Yeah. You see, the problem with the whole idea of thought
control...
You won't
sit in front of something.
Thought control
you will be inside
really
something.
Isn't really fine-grained enough, because when you're...
Why isn't it?
Why, when you're sat in front of a... Because not everybody thinks clearly. You need to be able to think clearly to control.
But no one moves their fingers clearly.
No, they don't, but if you're not thinking... Let's say...
How much do you have to concentrate to walk, Jono?
Not at all.
So how much do you think you have to concentrate to walk in a game?
Yeah, and admittedly, in things like control of walking, if it's basically replicating what you do as a human, fair enough, in like a virtual world sort of thing. But if you're going to be controlling sort of businessy type stuff,
we're talking about games then, but anyway.
You know, I think it's going to be there, but I don't think it's going to be as prevalent as necessarily we believe it might be. I think we'll still have keyboards and mice.
Do you think...
So do you not think you'll walk into your house at night and say, fetch email? And then like email will come up on the screen and it'll say, you've got 5 new emails and you can say, read them.
Possibly.
And they'll read them out.
Possibly.
I mean,
but
I
don't think,
now,
I don't think 2040 is going to look like Back to the Future 2.
It's 40 years. That's a lot. It's 35 years time. That's
yeah,
a long time.
You know, people were saying back
voice recognition
when you look at people
now.
Back in the 60s and or the 50s and they said, what's going to happen in the year 2000? They'd think it would basically look like Back to the Future 2.
That's true.
Look at it. It doesn't.
But you can just
but the best thing we've got
now
is the iPod Nano. That's all we've got.
On the other hand, I mean, you know, you look at people back in the 60s and everyone walks around and they've got a phone. Everyone could talk to everyone else on a phone. That would be completely unimaginable to people other than people who watch Star Trek.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, and then you
still haven't got slidey doors in our houses, which pisses me off.
And we don't all walk
you
around.
Stole it, did
we
you?
Don't all walk around drawing on fucking etch a sketches either, which happened a lot in Star Trek.
Can I make thing two is tablet pieces?
Yeah, I know, but they never really took off because everyone thinks I'll have more on Star Trek person from 1968.
Can I make two comments, two predictions for the 2050. Right. First of all, is
it's not about predictions. It's about what do you think the open source community will be like?
Okay. Well,
is that not a prediction?
That's a prediction.
It hasn't happened yet, and we're talking about it. What do you think, prediction?
I take your point. So the first one is about usability.
Oh, here we go.
Computers are going to be much more integrated in the future.
There won't be any keyboards and mice.
There will be. But computers, I think...
Pervasive computing.
I think computers will yeah.
What will you need a keyboard for?
Computers will be much more integrated. I think the whole cell networking thing will be really ingrained.
So, what? The whole cell networking?
Cell networking, you know, you'll be sharing power with other people and all the rest of it, all that kind of stuff.
Right.
Because broadband's going to, well, really, really fast networking is going to be everywhere. It'll be super broadband. The other thing, you mentioned community. I think the community in 2050 is not going to be quite as personal as it is now. If you talk about the British Linux community, all the same names come up because it's much smaller. In the same way that it wasn't as personal as it was 10 years ago.
Is that because it's niche at the moment?
Because in 2050, there's going to be a shitload of people around. And it's if you go up to people and talk about... There's communities of people who do Microsoft development, but they don't... seem to share the same kind of... They do have a degree of community, but it's not the same kind of community.
They're not sharing community ideals, particularly.
Because if...
You don't have mugs, do you? You have lugs, but not mugs.
Yeah. And the other thing is, I mean, if open source
is so... That's not Max's groups, by the way.
if open source is so dominant and everybody's using it, I think the community will suffer because everyone likes a common thing to fight against. Because a lot of people who are into open source like fighting against
it. So like the underdog theory.
Yeah.
So, any other final thoughts?
Do you think that... kind of on that point, if Linux becomes dominant and open source becomes dominant, do you think we'll see a chunk of people who drop out of Linux and open source because it's dominant?
I reckon they will.
And then they start trying to revive BIOS.
And they'll move on to the next thing.
Or they start using Atheos or something like that.
Or the Solaris desktop.
or Open Solaris, yeah. Because I think there are... It's the same as, you know, just like a political example. You got the impression that some of the IRA people... didn't want to put down the guns for the ceasefire because they weren't actually fighting for the freedom of Ireland. They just liked shooting people. And I think there are people in the Linux community who are exactly the same. They like fighting the evil empire, not necessarily fighting for Linux, but fighting against Microsoft.
It's great. I mean, it's great having a goal like that. It's great knowing that you're getting up in the morning, you feel like you're doing something that's morally
something
right.
Noble.
So currently, you can pretty much pitch operating systems as there's Microsoft... There's desktops I'm talking about now. There's Microsoft desktops, there's Linux desktops. At the moment, it's those two that are fighting it out. Do you think in like 35 years' time, there will be like 4 or 5 different operating systems that are all vying for it?
That sounded to me, that had very much the ring of how naive was the Bald Man 40 years now when there were 4,000 operating systems or 400,000. But go, oh, there could be 4 or 5. That had very much the same ring as 640K ought to be enough for everybody.
So, I mean, do you think there'll be like...
Why would everyone have their own
up there with
thing?
Linux, with...
Your computer works nothing like mine, which works nothing like it.
Possibly.
You know, I mean, that's the problem with trying to imagine things. You say, okay, will there be 4 different operating systems?
I think it's going to be level.
Maybe there'll be 4 billion, one per person on the planet.
I think the thing is, in 2050, there isn't going to be someone with 90% market share.
Let's hope
there isn't going to be someone. And if there is, I don't know who it's going to be.
If it was 90% Linux, would you be happy with that?
I'd be happy so long as Linux retains the ideals that it's got now.
Exactly.
If it turns into this proprietary quagmire of shit, then I won't be happy. Because it's not just about Linux, it's about the whole
thing. It's about idealism.
It's the end of the show.
It is indeed.
End of season three.
What?
Episode 3. Sorry. You'd allow me a slight slip.
We're used to it.
Okay, so it's time for the emails.
Yeah. We've got a tune.
A new tune.
A new jingle.
So John Dodson has gone away.
John, again.
He's the man.
I get the impression he was infuriated by some of the discussion on the forums. But he took it in good jest. And
to be honest,
gone away.
It's only John who can be asked to produce anything, though, isn't
it? Yeah. Fucking people moaning about
and
it.
And after he went away and cried like a little girl that he was crushed, he's come up with a new jingle.
Yeah, and it's rather good, so let's hear it.
So let's do the letters.
This is the realest thing I've ever made in my whole life. Old Nick Luck Radio had some letters on it. Holy f***ing shit.
He likes that.
Old Dot read them or some kids. Holy f***ing shit. With a sod off here and a bullocks there. Here a f*** there, so f*** everywhere. A bunch of bull. Old Nick Luck Radio had some letters. Holy f***ing shit. You don't like this song?
Laughing over laughing.
Absolutely nice, fantastic.
That's quality apart from, I feel sorry for the fucking duck, he was regularly treading on all the way through it.
Is it me, or is it weird to hear Americans say sod?
It is.
They're like,
and bollocks.
And bollocks. I can't decide whether he knows that bollocks isn't the real bollocks or not.
It sounds like a cleaner, doesn't it? New bollocks! So, should we do what the track says and do some... Actually, did you say anything about letters in there? I can't fucking remember.
Well, that's I think I said had some letters.
Lug Radio had some letters.
Holy fucking shit.
Holy fucking shit.
You forgot the beeps.
Holy
beep
in...
Beep.
Right, Aid.
I can start. I have an email.
You always start, Aid, but you never finish.
It takes me a long time to finish. It has been noted. Yeah. Dog has written in.
Dog.
Any particular dog? No, it's not dog. It's dog.
The subject is dog. So it says, next time, get Jono to feed that fucking dog before you do a recording. It was yapping away throughout one of the parts last time. Or tell someone to take it out for a walk. Or send it to the lab where they give beagles cigarettes. Now, he also provides a link here, Jono.
Yes, yes.
tobaccofreedom.org/issues
/landmen/beagles,
which proves once and for all that beagles do smoke.
No, no, you see, you're still wrong. Beagles don't choose to smoke.
I'd never said they chose to.
Pedal back. And it ought to be pointed out that Aid was being very considerate for your feelings, though I'm less considerate. What it actually says is, could you please get Jono to drown that fucking dog in a bucket of hot water?
You bastard.
Yeah, sorry about the dog. Phil finishes off by saying, apart from the dog, love the show.
Thank you.
Yep.
Thanks very much, Phil.
Dog.
Phil Dog. Phil Dog. Mr. Ben.
Mr. Ben. Read a letter.
Okay, we've got a letter from Carl Savage. He loves the show, and we're opening his eyes to the wonders of open source software.
Opening them wide.
But he talks about some of his other stuff, and then he asks about video editing. He says he's used Final Cut Pro on the Mac.
Ooh.
Two bad Mac. Things at once. And Adobe Premiere on the PC. But really don't want to pay those price tags or even touch a Mac. So do you guys know of any open source video editing software? With anywhere near the features of the aforementioned programs?
John Lee said, DD. I mean, that'll
show. And he says and he also says, keep up the great show, and that more swearing is needed.
Excellent.
Fuck. There is a point there. We've talked about PityV in the past, which is a video editor, and we've talked about Diva, which is a video editor. But are they anything like as good as Final Cut Pro? Or
no.
Maybe
no,
we should do a second time.
Not at the moment. I mean, this week there's been some more development on Diva that I was reading about, and that he's done more on the UI and some of the functionality. I mean, he's still writing lots of bits.
I think you mean
UI.
More on a fucking UI, don't
the
you?
The fucking
remember more swearing.
Yeah, the more fucking shit, fucking UI shit, motherfucker.
What was that fucking called?
It was fucking called the UI.
Okay,
and it stands for
user interface.
Uninterrupted internal fucker.
So there's Diva, there's Pity,
Kino.
Kino?
Cinelera.
Yes. Cinelera.
Cinelera is the most...
Cinelera is the most feature complete, yeah. But it's also...
It's only got one glass clipper though, right?
anybody tried Main Actor? Have you tried Main Actor Pro?
I've seen it, but I've not used it. I mean, it's
isn't
proprietary.
That commercial?
Yeah.
Yep.
Cinelera is interesting because Cinelera is by... Not so much now, but in its original state, was by far and away the ugliest piece of software you'll ever see in your life.
So was it Cinelera or the ugly sister?
It was the ugly sister. Tenfold. Look, listeners, if you can find a piece of software that's uglier than Cinelera, let us know. We'd love to hear it. Blender's not ugly. It's got lots of buttons, but it's not
guys,
ugly.
Guys, emails?
Emails, yes. Yeah, emails. So, thank you very much. What was his name?
Carl Savage.
Carl Savage.
Yeah, Diva and Pitavy.
There you go. A brief one here from David Jochumsen, who's from Denmark. And he says, seen from a Danish standpoint, I have to ask, are you often drunk when doing these shows? Now, I don't want to disappoint you, but we are never drunk when we do these shows.
Disappointing you.
Well, you know, God knows I wouldn't mind.
There was the one show where you had a couple of beers.
There was one show where us two had a few beers. But we weren't drunk.
No, we've never...
No, obviously. I've only had a couple.
Yeah. I haven't had a couple all night.
Come to come to Lug Radio Live 2006 and you'll see the Lug Radio team pissed.
There you'll see us sup ale.
Great quantity. English style.
Thank you very much, David Jochumsen, who is Dark Side Dave on Hashtag Radio.
Nice. Ah, cool. Right, I've had a an email. Well, I've not had it. We've had it. From our old friend, David Madeley.
David!
He's the man down under.
where women flow and men chunder.
Nice. Yeah, he says, I think the software you need to do... you need to do software deployment management stuff that you were talking about in your show.
This is the thing that I was talking about.
That sort of thing is part of Nivelle's red carpet. A number of people have sent this in.
I've got an email here from Andrew Mason, who also said Simeon's red carpet, check it out. Now, I thought Simeon's red carpet was kind of like closed source, but...
Novell open sourced it and came up with Open Carpet.
Open Carpet? Fantastic.
It's a cunning name, isn't it?
Yeah.
It'd be a lot better calling it Red Open, wouldn't it?
I'm definitely going to check that out.
Yeah, I think it only deploys RPMs, but I might be wrong.
That's fine. That's fine with me.
There was something else that someone...
It was Zenworks was the other one.
Yeah.
Novell had Zenworks already, so when they bought Zimian, they just open sourced Red Carpet.
The other thing was that somebody suggested was you could use scripts, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, thanks.
I mean, you could build your own Debian archive.
Yeah,
and then how do you get everything to check in from it?
Cronut.
Yeah, because that's what I want to happen. I want my machines to wake up and upgrade shit without
me
knowing.
That's what we should be doing.
It.
Yeah,
my fucking beard.
But yeah, it's your own Debian archive. Of course, you know exactly what's going on them because it's your archive they're cronapting to.
Yeah.
So, yeah, my next email was just basically Andrew Mason saying the same thing about red carpet stroke open carpet.
Well, I think you get to read a new mail then.
Yeah, definitely. Pass me one over.
Okay.
Oh, I'll take this nice... Oh, that's not a short one, is it? Jonathan Smith says, have you all seen Automatics or Automatics?
No, what is it?
He says, the show is fun and interesting, well worth the space on the MP3 player. Let's have a small MP3 player if he's concerned about space. Often Ubuntu is mentioned, and as someone deeply interested in third-party aspects of the distro, I wait to see what your thoughts about Automatics. Here's the link, and it's ubuntuforums.org/showthread.php T=66563.
So let me get this right.
Basically, it's a bunch of cool bash scripts that allows normal users to do many things that they want to do in Ubuntu with a GUI.
Right.
I thought without a GUI.
No, he says to do many of the things they want to do in Ubuntu with a GUI.
Oh, I see. The idea is that the stuff that you might want to do with a GUI, you can do without a GUI by using
all these bash scripts.
Because what normal users want is use fucking bash all the time.
That's exactly it, yes.
2000, party over.
Master Ben. Monsieur Bon.
Got one here from Patrick Finch. He says, having listened...
What's so funny about that?
Nothing. We never laugh at people's names here at Love Radio. We don't condone it.
We don't
condone it. It's disgraceful behaviour.
It is.
Having listened to your shows, I wondered if you'd be interested in doing an interview about Open Solaris. If you'd be interested, I think we could get Adam Leventhal from the Solaris Kernel Engineering Group for
a
phone interview.
What a bloody good idea.
That sounds like a great idea.
Almost like he read our minds.
That's a fantastic idea. Thank you very much for that suggestion.
Yeah,
well deflected.
Done and dusted.
And I think we should get him on. Yes, indeed. we've got one here from Reuven Steinberg, who is exceedingly abusive about the fact that the Lug Radio map doesn't recognise Jerusalem in Israel, or indeed anywhere else in Israel. All we can do is say that the map's on Frapper.
Yeah.
We're sorry about that. It's not our fault. It's AIDS' fault, because he chose Frapper to be inserted for the map.
Well, technically, it's Google's fault.
No, it's not Google's fault at all. No. They recognise Jerusalem, I would expect, but Frapper doesn't recognise everything that Google does.
I thought
Frapper
just hooked into the Google APIs.
No, Frapper's got its own big list of cities.
Ooh.
The APIs all work on Latin long coordinates, not on anything else. So you have to give it Latin long coordinates to be able to get the map.
So who was he?
His name's Reuven Steinberg.
So Reuven really should submit a bug to Frapper.
So,
in all seriousness,
this is probably my own misunderstanding. Is this when it says it doesn't recognise Jerusalem?
When you type it, it doesn't ever recognise.
Is this just a technical thing, or is this a religious thing? Is there? Is there? I know nothing about this. But is this because just a technical glitch?
Yeah, basically.
Or do some religions dispute where Jerusalem was originally meant to be?
They've got a list of cities, and Jerusalem is not on it, and neither is anywhere else in Israel. I don't know whether that's just
most of the cities are American and yeah. English.
Yeah. I don't know whether it's just coincidence, whether it's specifically anti-Israeli, whether it doesn't recognise anywhere in Bolivia either, or whether they went and got the list of cities from the Arab coalition or something.
You know what we should do? We should have a word with Frapper and find out.
I think they'll add cities on. I think they have a request process, do they not?
Right.
I think so.
Reuben! I will email Frapper and find out.
Reuben, yep. Thank you for letting
us know. Reuben or
Reuben?
Reuben. Reuben.
Thank you for letting us know, Reuben.
Thank you, Reuben. Okay, I've had an email from Leo Howell. And he says, "Hi, guys and gingers. I've just been enjoying the latest show. I started by listening to all the old shows over the summer break, and it's great that season 3 is underway."
Yes,
thank you. You might like to know that chin-chin is Japanese diminutive slang for penis.
The penis.
I don't know about Chinese, though. So, all the best, Leo. Thanks for that.
So,
and he's in Japan.
So, Ak, when you say my enormous chin, you don't mean my enormous chin-chin, do you?
No, I certainly do not.
Right. Because your chin-chin is tiny, right?
That's enormous.
Right. Your ging-ging chin-chin. Yeah. Thank you very much, Leo. We love it when people email us little
random facts.
Random facts and information. So,
if Matt was here, I'm sure he would pronounce it correctly.
He would, but he's not yet.
He's a bit of an internationalist,
yeah,
apparently.
He is.
That's
next
one of the
out.
Descriptions.
I'm out.
Are you out?
Monsieur Ben.
I've got a couple here. People were talking about root access and roaming profiles and stuff like that. But
I think it was proved that I was right and Ak was wrong in this case.
I think it was proved that a lot of people believe you're right, but a lot of people
are wrong.
How many
people believed you
were
right?
But then again,
loads.
That doesn't really care about what other people believe, so it doesn't really matter.
Loads of people. I care about what other people believe about as much as Aid cares about consumers. So, we've got a mail from Mark Kirk, who's somewhere in the UK, who's written an enormous, enormous screed about Linux. And
now, when we say enormous, we mean two A4 pages.
Two A4 pages written in.
Does he have lots of extra time on his hands?
Yeah, well, yes. Funny you should mention that.
Funny you should mention that because he is a writer. He does use Gentoo. Nonetheless, thank you for letting us know all this enormous stream of consciousness. But absolutely, I mean, you know, he's a big fan and he's obviously really getting into the Linux thing, really got into the Linux thing, so that's fantastic.
It's great.
So good luck. He also asked whether Matt and I are secret gay lovers.
No, that's Ak and Jono.
Me?
I can hear reveal that we are not, but thank you for the inquiry anyway.
We're not.
Thanks
but
very
we
much,
used
Mark
to be.
That is it for emails.
It is, but we've got one more thing to do.
A couple more things to do, actually.
Mention the forums, mention Frapper.
We have.
Mention IRC.
IRC, Hashlog Radio, this man. Yep. Mr. Ben is, you're a mover and shaker in Hashlog Radio.
Yeah, well, yeah.
So tell us about it. Why should people go to Hashlog Radio?
So that Mr. Ben can kickban them.
Could do that if you want.
So what's cool about the channel?
Well, if you're on IRC anyway, then certainly it's one of the places to be. There's plenty of guys who go on there. You can get a bit of advice if you're looking for advice on Linux-type things, and the odd non-Linux-type thing as well. Or if you just want a bit of the old banter.
There's loads of pointless discussion in there.
There is loads of pointless discussion.
There's a guy called G.I. Joe.
G.I. Joe, he's from Denmark.
He just posts random links all of the time in there.
True.
And Popey, who just... post links. He's got loads of virtual domains with just a little picture on there.
Joke.popey.com.
Yeah, so we need to give a shout out for that.
Absolutely.
We need to talk about, we're not going to talk too much about this. Look, Radio Live 2006.
It's happening.
Yes. Currently.
What is the condition, John?
We've picked a venue.
Oh, yes.
We've placed a request for the booking, and we're just currently waiting on the price coming back. We're pretty sure it's going to be fine.
Can we reveal a date?
We can't reveal a date. Until we confirm the date. I'll tell you what, we...
Oh, no.
No, we can't.
It's going to be next year.
No giving.
Okay,
yeah,
so
no,
keep your diaries.
In the next episode, I'm pretty damn sure we're going to be able to reveal the date and some preliminary speakers.
Yeah.
But one thing to point out, one thing, well, One thing to point out is that we're looking for lots of help with this one. We're going to have a much more space than this one.
It's going to be a much bigger deal altogether.
Yeah, so we want more speakers, we want more exhibition people to come down. Okay? We also want to run... One thing I'd like to see is a hardware hacking exhibition. So there's loads of people in the UK who are hacking on interesting bits and pieces. Come down and show us what you're doing. You know, people are hacking games, consoles.
Potentially, we've got a lot more room in this venue. So there is, if you want to bring some cool stuff down, just let us know.
Absolutely. If you've got a cool thing you'd like to demonstrate, or you and a group of people would like to demonstrate, then just let us know that you'd like to run a workshop or do some demos or something. We can probably find you a room.
Absolutely.
So just come down and do some stuff. Like Jonas is talking about a maker's fair sort of thing for hardware hackers, something like that. If you want
There'll
to do
be all the usual
like that,
lightning talks.
Let us know.
Yeah.
We're also talking about doing head-to-heads. So we can have two people who've got two opposing viewpoints in something. We're going to put them on the lightning talk stage. Who can
give them a knife each?
We can basically have in like a 20-minute slot or something like that, a grudge match about what they think and what they're doing. So if you're passionate about
open source street fighting,
If you're passionate about something, you want to get involved with that, let us know.
Like Mono, maybe.
Yeah, Mono versus Python, KD versus GNOME,
absolutely.
Gentoo versus everyone else. What else were we talking about for the show? We're going to have loads of stuff there.
We are going to have loads of stuff.
There's space on the wiki for anybody who's not able to do a talk or hardware hacking or anything like that, but still wants to help.
Yeah.
There's tons of ideas.
It really is a community event, so we need community help with it.
We've got a lot of back of house stuff that needs doing. People to work on the door, people to help, guide guests around, all that kind of thing. So if there's any, if you want to help, but like Mr. Spencer, you're not going to be doing a talk or you don't want to run a workshop or anything, go off to the wiki and sign your name up and we'll find you a job. Believe
Where
me.
Could we find
and
such
you, and you blag your way in for now if you help us out. So
there's wiki.logradio.org.
Thank you for that.
The other thing that's currently being discussed,
international visitors free this year?
I don't know.
Yes, they are.
International visitors.
Yes. International visitors are free.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Nero kicked off a discussion about an ET tournament.
We're going to dress up as short aliens.
Yes.
An enemy territory tournament.
So there's going to be
is that like a chess ladder?
What?
Very possibly.
Obviously not, judging by the blank looks.
there's going to be a tournament, and hopefully with the finals. I think the idea is to build it up online, and then the final's going to be at Lug Radio Live, and it'll be great for us to get a little trophy and all that kind of stuff. So,
nice.
So that's been discussed, and everyone's having arguments about heavy weapons at the moment on the forums. So if you're interested in that, go to the forums and check out the thread on that. But yeah, this is going to be much bigger. Should we announce... Shall we? Okay, it's going to be 2 days this year.
2 days of goodness.
It was 1 day last year, and we just couldn't fit everything. It's going to be 2 days.
One and a half, but basically there will be a second day.
And on the Saturday night, there's going to be a big bash, and we're all going to have a great time. So we just need to confirm.
Or a big K-shell.
We need to confirm the venue before we release all of the specifics. And if you want to do a talk, send us an email. Let us know that you're interested in doing a talk. We don't have a limitation on lightning talks that are interesting. Because we can put as many tracks on as we
want.
Loads
more speakers, loads more space. So bigger and better than ever.
If you want to get involved, it's going to be the greatest Linux event in the UK ever. Ever, ever, ever.
Until LRL 2007.
Yes.
Absolutely.
Anything else we need to discuss?
Something else I wanted to bring up was that a couple of people have been asking about Lug Radio t-shirts. We haven't got an official Lug Radio t-shirt or anything like that, but Sparks, his shop at nerd.ws, does t-shirts with the Lug Radio design. Certainly some of the fans have bought them and have been very pleased with the quality and all that, so go there and get them.
That's nerd.ws.
Yeah, I think does he give us money every time someone buys a shirt?
£1, yeah.
Wicked. So do that, you'll be donating to Lug Radio, and you get a cool shirt, and, you keep Sparks in pies. So that's
what we are. We're also thinking about doing some Lug Radio Live shirts as well. I'm in the process of conning John Leach to do
We're not
strip.
Thinking about it, we're going to do
it. We are going to do it, and John Leach has provisionally said, yes, he's going to do like an Everybody Loves Raymond, Eric Raymond type strip, but for Lug Radio Live.
Fantastic.
Stick it on a shirt. Oh. The idea that we've got is that if you buy a shirt, you get into the show for free.
Woo!
So that's
but the shirts aren't going to be like 50p or anything. No. You're still not spending
And if you make your own t-shirt, that doesn't count.
No. The idea is that we want to make it as low cost for everyone as possible. And if you buy a shirt, then you're buying a Lug Radio thing. And if you come there, you're going to have the shirt on the day. It's going to be great fun and all the rest of it. So
forward slash get involved.
Yes, yeah. And the site's not online yet. It will be once we confirm the venue. But yeah. It's great. We've got some great speakers lined already.
Already, yeah.
And we haven't even tried yet. It's still 9 months away, whatever.
Yep. Time enough for you to have a child.
If you've got good ideas for speakers, then put them on the wiki.
Yep.
We're looking at the list of speakers on the wiki. We can talk to people. If you want to do a speech, you want to talk yourself, absolutely get in touch with us.
Yep. It's going to be absolutely quality. It's going to, if you thought last year was good, if you went last year, it's going to just absolutely piss on last year. It's going to be so good. So
unfortunately, you're going to have to wait till the next episode for dates.
Yes. But keep your ears peeled. If you can peel your ears, it's not recommended.
Because you can peel your eyes, obviously.
Yeah, just peel your eyes, don't peel your ears. Maybe peel some spuds.
Yeah, you mentioned John Leach and everybody loves Eric Greenman.
Yes.
You probably ought to mention everybody loves Lug Radio.
Oh, yes.
Which is truly fantastic. Which is...
The guy did it and just didn't tell anyone
all
about
laugh.
It.
Yeah, that's amazing.
We're very impressed with that. Now...
Who did it?
Michael Erskine, MSET-MD.
MSET-MTD.
The hardest man.
Is he the hardest man?
He's the guy with scissors through his tongue.
Through his tongue, yeah.
The one who you called out at Radio Live.
Yeah, yeah. You called him ugly, if I remember rightly.
Did I?
You asked for the hardest man in the room to stand up, and when he did that, you said, "You're very ugly."
Did I?
Yeah, you called the hardest man in the room ugly.
I didn't mean that.
No, obviously not.
Honest Gov, I didn't mean it.
Excellent.
So, yeah.
Well, it's been a great show.
Yes, it's going great. Thank you, Mr. Ben, for coming down.
Thank you very much.
Thanks for having me.
Have you enjoyed it?
Yeah, it's been great.
Cool.
Good.
Tune in 2 weeks' time.
Yeah.
For episode 4.
Yes. And details about the big bash next year.
Date will be announced.
Take it easy.
Bye now.
Bye-bye.
Bye.